Well, hello. This is Troy, your resident host and Michael channel for TruthLoveEnergy.com, and I want to welcome you to another edition of Truth Love Energy's podcast. So sit back and enjoy, and if you want to learn more about the Michael teachings or my work, go to TruthLoveEnergy.com and check it out. Have a great... enjoy the show. Woo!
Chinese man, inbred Chinese devil man. Four more years of choking on the devil's cock.
Four more years of choking on the devil's cock.
George Bush is choking on the devil's cock. Choking on the devil's cock. Spears is choking on the devil's cock.
Iraq
choking on the devil's cock.
North Korea
choking on the devil's cock. Choking on the devil's cock.
Four more years of choking on the devil's cock.
Four more years of choking on the devil's cock.
Right.
Iran is choking on the devil's cock.
Bobby Brown is choking on the devil's cock.
You ill in her skin. Everyone knows that she's not human. Trying hard not to shape shift back into a reptilian. Into a reptilian. Eating babies for breakfast. Drinking blood from everything they can. Laura Bush is choking on the devil's cock. The whole world, seems to be choking on the devil's cock.
And what about the fucking UN?
They're choking on the devil's cock.
Africa,
choking on the devil's cock.
Sweden, I don't know if
they're choking on the devil's cock.
Choking on the devil's cock. That is so funny. I thought you would all enjoy that as the wonderful way to begin the new year with my well-known irreverence and crazy way of living and seeing the world. And I happened to stumble across that song. It's actually called Laura Bush's Eyes by a group called Foxycock. And the song was from this wonderful network called PodSafe Music Network. That's a service for podcasters where all the music is safe to podcast without legal ramifications, and artists contribute and podcasters or producers of podcasts can pull from there without any trouble. The only catch is that PodSafe Music Network must be mentioned, so I've done so, and now no one's going to get in trouble, and you got to enjoy a hilarious song. And with all that's happening in the world today, that song says it all. And please don't get all new agey on me and saying this kind of provocation just causes more trouble, because that'll just make me laugh even harder. See, I think a major key in alleviating a lot of the sense of victimization and confusion and frustration and feelings of helplessness is through humor. But that makes sense, since in the Michael system I'm known as a sage, which we'll get to later, if you aren't familiar with that term. But without levity, the world can be a very heavy place to carry, especially for the more sensitive older souls, like me, and like many of you. So just enjoy the cock of the devil, along with everyone else, as we all try to adapt, improve, and transform a war-ridden world into a place of love and peace. Some of you can do this through calling upon, you know, fairy dust and butterflies and lavender unicorns and rainbow bridges and all of that lovely stuff, but that just doesn't work for me. I have to have something that makes my belly laugh or makes my feels more raw. And some of us, like me, do this through making fun of the absurdities in life. Ultimately, we all have to consider our choices and behaviors and the feelings that we contribute to the world paradigm. So however you decide to bring love and peace and levity to the world, whether it's through butterflies and unicorns or through the Cock of the Devil songs or through hard work and serious grassroots changes, we'll all figure it out someday. And hopefully soon. Well, okay, so welcome to the first podcast of 2007, and this should be the first of many regular podcasts, I hope. I intend to do one of these every month, if not twice a month, because I just love the idea of your being able to commute to work or lounge around in the evening with your iPod or your music player, your personal music player, or studiously tuning in so you can easily not have to worry about where you are. I mean, this is fantastic, this technology. I love it so much. And it's truly becoming one of the more spiritual glues we have as a people. I've met so many people through the internet that I never would have met before, and I'm very grateful for that. And this whole podcasting thing, I'm very grateful for as well, because I'm getting to hear news and commentary from people who would never have been able to make it to television or our more mainstream media. So this is great. In fact, this show is a prime example. So what I'd like to do as the podcast start coming through 2007 is to create regular segments that you can count on and look forward to hearing, but also so that you can write in through email and comment or question about those segments and know exactly what segments you're commenting about. For the most part, I'd like to divide the show into commentary about current events in the news with maybe an emphasis on politics, animals, the paranormal, things that are happening weird in the world. And of course, this won't just be from my perspective, but from Michael's higher perceptions of these things that are happening in the world. Then that would always be followed by a segment focusing on back to basics, which would be a quick discussion about some of the more basic concepts in the Michael teachings. Another segment, especially appealing to the long-time students, would be beyond the basics, where new or advanced concepts are discussed. And then I would follow that with something like listener email. So that would be really great if you guys could start contributing to that. Send in your emails. I'd love to hear your feedback about the show and what can be improved or what you tend to be getting from it. Or just general questions you'd like to pose to me or Michael. Or just your own comments about the podcasts or news you would like to share, anything you want. Just make sure you send it to any podcast-related mail. Send it to podcast@truthloveenergy.com. And I can't guarantee an email response. As many of you know, I have a lot of troubles keeping up with my emails. But I'll definitely read all of them, and some of them will make it to the air. So, and then next, after the listener emails, there will, I hope, be able to fit in live interviews with a single student or a group of students in a section I'm going to call Students Speak. And that may not be in every podcast because it'll depend on people's availability. But if you'd like to be interviewed, let me know. Right now I have a few people in mind that I'm going to ask to be in the next show, so you can look forward to that. And finally, at the end of each show, there will be the popular Mini Michael, which is it's kind of a closing thought for the show, focusing on a specific relevant concept, I hope. And then in between each segment, I don't know if I'm going to use clips or if I'm going to use whole songs. We'll see. You'll see as this podcast is completed. But I would love to add transitional music that is music that inspires me or makes me laugh or makes me happy, so that I can encourage you to check out new artists or music you may not have heard before. And a lot of it's not going to be the traditional new agey beautiful stuff. It's going to be happy, playful, lullabyish, melancholy, upsetting, whatever it is that I'm in the mood for the show. And I just hope you enjoy the music as much as the rest of the show. And please let me know what you thought about them. And I'll make sure that links and references to those artists are included, whether they come from the podcast PodSafe Music Network or from my own library. Oh, and I wish I could promise that Michael will be channeled for every show, but until I get the gist of how to edit, I'll just be reading transcripts from Michael that are done in chats or group sessions or from the forum. The more comfortable I get, the more live channeling will be involved for sure, okay? So that'll be nice. Yay! So let's get started because we have a lot to cover in this first show. What I'd like to start off with is the first installment of the basic introduction to Michael, or basic introduction to the Michael teachings in the basic introduction section or segment. This is going to be a lot of information to absorb in one listen, and so I'm going to break it up over several podcasts. You can always scan through and listen as you digest each part of the intro. You can, you know, pause and do whatever you need to do because there is going to be a lot of information. What I'm going to start off with today is a basic introduction in general, followed by a basic introduction to the seven roles. And it's going to be very simplistic, so I highly encourage you to continue studying beyond this basic introduction. I just thought it would be a good idea to have this on audio for those who wish to share it with others, or who may not be so inclined to read. And what I'm going to be sharing in these first installments of the basic back to basics is actually just text from the truthloveenergy.com website in the basic introduction section. So instead of waiting for each podcast, if you'd like, you can just go ahead and go to the site and read the basic introduction from where we left off in the podcast. But basically, I'm just going to be reading it to you and breaking it up into segments that are more digestible. And for those of you who are already familiar with the basics, you can just skip this segment, or you can listen in and see if you learn something new. So, are you ready? Here we go! Basics. This is just a complete basic introduction. So, who is Michael and what is the Michael teachings? We'll start with that. Understanding who and what Michael is gets easier after understanding what they teach through their channels. For now, it's easiest to focus on what they say rather than the how or the who. The details about Michael will fall into place as we go. Some people refer to Michael in plural, as in, quote-unquote, the Michaels, while others feel fine calling Michael him or he when referring to them. Most students call them Michael, speaking grammatically about them in plural, which is why I keep referring to them as them, since Michael is actually a group of souls. According to Michael, we each belong to our own unique spiritual family, consisting of about 1,000 souls, referred to as an entity. There are many, many, many of these entities or spiritual families all over the world and beyond. Each entity family shares a deep connection and even shares a consciousness. Each soul is like a fragment of their family who eventually seeks to reunite with that family. Michael is a specific spiritual family or entity who has reunited, finished their lives on the physical plane, and now teaches from a different plane of existence through people who have agreed to act as a voice for them. Michael suggested the name Michael, since that was the actual name of the personality, who was the last physical lifetime of one of the souls who make up that entity. So if you have to rewind to understand that sentence, do so now. After thousands of lifetimes of experience, Michael now teaches a perception of reality that encourages the practice of acceptance and creativity through the power of choice. Michael describes a map of the cosmos, our souls, and our individual personalities, helping us understand where we fit in, how to improve our relationships internally and externally. so we can get on with enjoying our lives as was intended by our souls. What's come to be called the Michael Teachings could actually be called by any name, really. Although most of the information will seem new, you may see it as an accumulation of teachings recognizable from other spiritual pursuits. Either way, Michael has a way of teaching the information in an amazingly succinct way. Most people who become students find this teaching to be deeply familiar in many ways, almost as if they know the teachings already, but now they have a structure for it. And one vital thing to understand is that this teaching has no requirements or demands on the student. There are no judgments on your level of participation or commitment. This teaching is purely to be seen as one perception of life and the universe, not as a conclusive religion or a belief system. In your exploration of this teaching, it will always be encouraged and supported that you validate what's true for you by using your own sensibilities, your own trust in yourself, and through testing. So let's begin. Choice. Michael's teaching can be summed up in one single quote. You are here to learn how to choose and to choose how to learn. There's really no better way of conveying this teaching's bottom line than through that deceptively simple statement. Michael teaches that we are making choices on many levels at all times, as a personality and as a soul. Our soul journeys through many, many lives, learning about itself, the universe, and everything, by using and evolving that one basic tool, choice. They go further to say that there are no bad choices, only experiences, and the lessons gained from those experiences. Nothing is wasted, not even the most boring or painful of lifetimes. We simply learn to make better choices as we gain awareness and as we gain experience. While Michael doesn't use the terms good or bad, they still acknowledge that we eventually learn to make choices that bring us and others more freedom, acceptance, pleasure, and growth. This philosophy of choice frees you from destructive criticism against yourself and against others while encouraging your potential to learn from your so-called mistakes. Within this philosophy, even self-criticism and fear about your choices is still not a bad choice. It's just one choice of the many available to you at any moment. It will always be up to you to decide when to choose more gently and lovingly. And finally, Michael teaches that there is always choice available. Even the choice not to choose is a choice. No matter how difficult our lives may become, we always have the powerful tool of choice as a means to make a difference. Even within extreme limitations, there will always be a range of choice available, even if it's just the choice in how to interpret the experience. So, where do we come from? Tao. Some people are comfortable with the word God, and some are not. Some find the word God to be limiting, lacking the enormity of this wonderful source of life and beauty around us. Michael actually prefers not to use the word God either, using the Eastern term Tao, pronounced with like Tao with a hard D, and this means the way. It's an Eastern term, and it means the way. Michael has explained that we, especially those of the European culture or Western civilizations, have turned the word God into something far from what is true on a universal level. To help us move away from the stereotypes and limited images of God, Michael uses the term Tao, which brings with it no preconceived limitations or personifications. Regardless of the name you prefer, most people seem to have some form of recognition of a higher source, of which we are all a part and in which we all reside. Michael's teaching supports that concept that this source does exist in some way. So now, let's take a closer look at what they call our souls. Essence. Michael says that we are always connected to Tao, always residing within that source, even if we tend to forget. It's actually natural for us to forget, since each lifetime generates a new body with a new brain in which our soul must work to rebuild or return to conscious awareness. As we gain experience over many lifetimes, we tend to regain that awareness more quickly within a lifetime. In the beginning, According to Michael, the Tao brilliantly exploded out fragments of itself as a means to explore itself and the universes it created. These sparks, or souls, are imbued with the same freedom as Tao to do what they wish, explore what they wish, experience what they wish, interact as they wish, and generally experience everything possible. This freedom allows the Tao unlimited creativity and exploration as these souls run around being creative and experimental out there on their own. With all of this creativity and curiosity, a soul can easily get into trouble, go through painful growth, sadness, loneliness, fears, etc. But those experiences are part of the same spectrum of experiences that include joy, happiness, abundance, passion, love. Nothing is actually ever wasted or lost or bad from the soul's point of view, because our souls know an absolute sense of safety in the universe. Being in a lifetime is much like going to the movies. While sitting in the theater, we can have a whole spectrum of emotions and experiences as we are pulled into the action and drama of a really good movie. But we ultimately know we are safe and we can leave when it's over. Our souls experience that excitement for our lifetimes in a very similar way, except that as the soul gains experience, so does each personality, and it becomes easier to create far more manageable and enjoyable lifetimes. If you think of the very basic part of your soul as being a spark of the Tao, then think of those sparks as eventually choosing a kind of role to play in the universe. This spark or soul chooses one of seven roles, kind of like choosing what kind of car or vehicle to use to travel through the universe on its own. These roles are not limiting in any way. In fact, over many lifetimes, the ability to be that role becomes more important, fun, and easy. It's kind of like learning how to drive faster, easier, and you begin to choose even more exciting terrains. When your spark chooses its role, another way of saying it is that your soul chooses its essence. As you read more about the Michael teachings, you may find that the terms soul, essence, and role are used interchangeably for convenience. You will rarely hear the word spark, but it's included here so you can understand how the role was chosen. The role stays constant throughout all of your lives and beyond, but continues to improve its means of expression and its way of being with the additional lifetimes and experiences. So now we'll briefly cover the seven roles that make up the souls of this universe. This is a very simple introduction, so don't get too preoccupied with trying to determine your role just yet, as it is a bit more complicated than the descriptions here. This is just a basic introduction. It's very important to remember that the names used to identify the roles are only used for convenience and they are not to be taken literally. For instance, a priest essence can be a farmer or a plumber or a murderer. A server essence can be a preacher, housewife, a serial killer. The role describes the primary way of being for a soul, but that can show up in many ways. Each role will behave in ways that are terrible and frightening, as well as in ways that are beautiful and enlightening. Each role has a positive and negative pole, which helps describe the potential spectrum of behavior that a soul can exhibit, with the negative pole being more fearful and restrictive, and the positive pole being more loving and free. We will cover the polarities later. Sometimes the role is hard to detect because of several factors that may inhibit expression and behavior during a lifetime, such as parental influences, cultural expectations, gender roles, environmental conditions, so be patient as you study these and figure yours out. So there are seven basic ways of being, or roles, in the universe. In thinking about a spark leaving the Tao and choosing a role, it might be helpful to think of it this way. As a spark, you are still swimming in the white light that is home. And your soul is still very aware and connected to that home, or Tao. When your spark chose a role, it was a way of differentiating itself from that source. Our souls never truly leave Tao, or the Tao, but they separate themselves in a very creative way. Think of white light passing through a prism, separating that original light into seven visible rays of color that made up the original white light in the first place. In the same way that all color is still a part of white light, so are our souls forever a part of the spectrum of Tao, or God, no matter how separated we may seem to be. Your spark, or soul, chooses one of those colorful rays as its particular path of exploration for its journey out into the universe. And so here are the seven roles in essence. These priests and servers. These are the inspirational roles. The server inspires us one-on-one, while the priests inspire us on a mass scale. Servers see the world as their honored guests, while priests see the world as a congregation or flock. Remember, these are extremely simplistic descriptions, so don't get too caught up in these very simple descriptions. The artisan and the sage, these are the expression roles. The artisan to create and bring new things to the planet, while the sage entertains and makes us remember how to laugh. The artisan is more one-on-one, while the sage loves their spotlight. The artisan sees the world as a project, like a sculpture or a canvas, while the sage sees the world as their audience or playmates. Warriors and kings. These are the action roles. The warriors stand as our protectors and builders, getting us motivated and helping instill loyalty among us, while the king leads us into action as a group. The warrior sees the world as territory or challenges, while the king sees a kingdom or a realm. And then there's the scholar. This is the only neutral role, meaning it's the centerpiece and mediator of all other roles. The scholar studies life and observes, sometimes in strange ways, but always submerged in something their soul finds important to study, ranging from addictions and fear to even the obvious, which could be science and wisdom. This essence studies so often that it's actually the life itself that becomes the study. This is the most versatile role and can sometimes be quite the chameleon. The scholar sees the world as an object of interest or study. Although there are only seven roles from which to choose in the universe, this is in no way a limitation to the soul. There are many, many factors in addition to the role that makes each soul so unique. So let's learn more about a couple of important energies that make up each soul and makes them so unique. And we'll cover that in the next podcast. Well, that was beautiful. And hopefully the basics will keep your interest long enough to continue your studies. And I hope that you can get more out of it as the pieces start to come together, if you're just going to listen to it in the podcast. If you want to know more information, like I said, go to truthloveenergy.com and check it out. And now here we are to the Beyond the Basics. And lately the weather here in New York has been so wonky, and around the country, I guess in the world. And this prompted me to see if we had any previous comments from Michael about the weather or climate changes or global warming. A lot of people seem to think that such a warm winter, at least that's what we've been having here in the northeastern United States, that think that it must be a sign of global warming. Well, I found these responses in the forum, which led to some very interesting comments about other theories in the world. So, first, a student named Christian writes, "Hello, all. I was just watching the History Channel, and they have a show on about Little Ice Age, which apparently started in medieval times and eventually culminated with the year without a summer. For Michael, what is the possibility of this happening in my generation? If it does, when could we expect it? Signed, Christian." And then Michael responded, saying, "The probability of anything similar to what has become known as the Little Ice Age happening within your generation is low, at 15% probability. Based on our observations of global weather cycles, the next quote-unquote ice age will not be quote-unquote little, and is naturally due in approximately 400 years, with several global heat waves cycling through first to adjust water distribution and land mass. However, with human interaction and influence against these natural cycles, which cannot be accurately assessed as these influences are relatively new within these cycles, the onset of an ice age could be as soon as 200 years. In any case, an ice age or global warming are natural and will occur with or without human influence. Timing of these events is the only real factor that we see being affected by human influence. Incidentally, the theory of global warming is flawed and lacks reliable or accurate data for extrapolating speculative patterns as results of human influence. Though the concern is legitimate, human influence is a factor, but minimal, in light of the fact that global warming is a natural cycle of global weather that has occurred many times over. The minimal influence, however, is a valid concern in terms of human responsibility, and the efforts to minimize any destructive activity is good work." So that was very interesting, because we tend to think that as humans we have such a huge impact on everything. And we do. We do. From our perspective, we do. And especially from the perspective of how it impacts us as a species, and locally, how it impacts our environment and as a species. But as a whole system, it's actually rather insignificant from what it sounds like here. And that doesn't negate our responsibility as sentient beings on the planet to care for the environment and care for the animals and care for each other. But just Michael's answer is much more focused on the legitimacy of whether we are actually creating the ice age or whether we're actually creating the global warming. But Michael is basically saying we don't really create those things, we just change the timing of them. So I find that to be very interesting. So in response to this, another student, Perrine, writes, "If the theory of global warming is flawed, Can Michael tell us what other theories we've bought into as a society are flawed? I'm sure there are plenty of them, but highlighting a few would be great and thought-provoking, I'm sure. For instance, how about evolution, Darwinism, the Ice Age killed dinosaurs, nuclear fission is impossible, we use X percentage of our brain? These are just a few suggestions, and I'm sure there are other theories that we've been misled into believing." Signed, Perrine. So Michael says in response to that, Physical plane theories in general are flawed. Otherwise, they would not be theories. They would be predictable, consistent facts within your physical plane. Even when theories have substance and observability, extending from a hypothesis, they are not necessarily valid. In our communication with you, when we state that a theory is flawed, we speak of theories that are being treated as fact, with actions taken and measures implemented that have little or no substantiation. Okay, so I'm understanding that to be that they are only going to list theories that we act like are already established as facts, and that we're taking actions based on that and implementing measures with nothing to substantiate our reasons for doing so. If you understand that differently, let me know at podcast@truthloveenergy.com. So Michael continues on. Some flawed theories, then, are the AIDS theory. We have said before, and will state again, there is simply no validity to the theory of AIDS as it is accepted at this point. All treatments and diagnosis built upon this theory are severely flawed and are generating more harm than even the mythical disease. Ooh! Controversy. Macroevolution as part of evolution theory. We realize this theory makes sense, but it is myopic in that there are obvious clues to a more profound truth of your origins and evolution that most choose not to fathom. The morphogenic field theory is far more accurate. Woo! If any of you are into science and theories, I would love to hear your feedback about this. Pathogenic theory of disease. While this theory holds a great deal of truth, there is a major component of consideration missing which would explain why the theory is not consistent. Similar organisms in similar circumstances manifesting similar symptoms does not imply a contagion in the way that pathogenic theory explains. The morphogenic field theory could help complete the understanding of this theory. Ooh, the morphogenic field theory is mentioned again. What is that? And now, and then they go on to say, mechanistic biology theory. Treating the body as a machine will never provide cures for your ailments. Holistic theories are required for your species to regain its health. Ooh. So, okay, that's pretty straightforward. And then Michael goes on. There are far more flawed theories than this to list, but these are some of the most obvious and pervasive in your world at this time. In response to the list that you suggested, Perrine, Ice Age killed the dinosaurs, the impact of a meteor is far more accurate. Nuclear fission. Of course it is possible, though the problem of waste remains a valid current issue. There are productive uses for this waste that have not been invented, discovered yet. There are also methods of neutralizing the waste that have not been discovered or invented yet. We doubt widespread uses of nuclear fission will be used until these balancing factors can be implemented, and until then, small disasters and environmental impact will remain a high possibility. And the use of X percentage of the brain. Michael says, the entire brain is used, though this cannot be explained within the mechanistic paradigm, of course. Much of the percentage of brain that is considered unused are parts of the brain that are used to generate and sustain reality in a way that quantum theories will eventually confirm. Woo! So what do you think of all these comments from Michael in our Beyond the Basics section? I'd love to hear your feedback, so send in your emails to podcast@truthloveenergy.com. And now let's move on to some listener emails. And since we don't really have any listeners yet that are writing in, I'm going to read another question and answer from a student. Okay. This is a great question from a student. And I wanted to share what Michael had to say in response. And this question was posed by a student whose screen name is Tibtyc, or T-I-B-T-Y-C. Greetings, Michael. Essence is, to be honest, mainly just a word for me. Possibly a feeling, too, but vaguely so, at least not on a conscious level. How can I prove my essence existence to myself, and how to make contact between essence and personality stronger, more reliable, and more intimate, and of course more conscious. That is my question. And Michael responds saying, the most powerful proof, and they quoted that, the most powerful quote-unquote proof you have of your essence is in any mirror you pass. It is only a matter of perception as to where you see the line between you and essence. In the same way that one could ask for proof of love, only symptoms can be highlighted or emphasized, giving an indication that something valid, yet amorphous, is involved. The line between you and essence is an illusion, so to simply see yourself as alive, animated, choosing, this is the most tangible proof. However, there are experiments to which you can invite your essence to partake. Essence delights in the opportunity to exist alongside the personalities it creates. We cannot emphasize that much, or we cannot emphasize that enough. Much like an awkward parent standing on the sidelines from a teen who thinks he is quote-unquote all that, when personality turns to essence and asks if it wants to join, essence is immediately available and with tremendous amounts of energy, truth, and love. Adjust your inner and outer vision to a decisive stance that you are gently and enthusiastically open to your essence. And then determine what you would like to have as proof. It could be as simple as a synchronicity, or as complicated as a major change in your life. Ask essence to bring itself to your awareness at, for example, 7:07 every day, and watch this happen. Ask essence to bring itself to your awareness by helping infuse you with the energy and empowerment to alter your life to a point of absolute abundance on your terms, and watch what happens. In all cases of experimentation, you will be the key. You will not see the 707 unless you look. You will not experience the abundance you seek unless you do. And in the end, you will find the greatest proof of essence is merely you. Woo! Okay, so now we're at the mini Michael section. And what I'm going to share here isn't a new mini Michael, but one of the last ones that was shared in the forum before my getting bogged down with life demands. For the next podcast, I'd love for you to send any requests for a mini Michael, which is basically a concept for which you'd like Michael to comment, such as subjects like jealousy, fear, art, anxiety, time, or anything you might think is a sort of an invitation for a thought for the closing of the show. For today, here are some excerpts from various sessions where Michael commented on the subject of boredom. That's a very, very insidious and pervasive feeling that a lot of people have, is this sense of boredom. So here's what Michael has to say. Boredom, according to Michael, is the result of our inability to reconcile tangible reality with our fantasy reality. Over time, Michael has shared these things about boredom. Here we go. Boredom is always a symptom of Maya. And Maya is a phrase that Michael uses to reference sort of self-delusion or the illusion of life. It's sort of the being caught up in the game instead of being able to see the bigger picture. So boredom is always a symptom of Maya and is a literal self-lie to remove responsibilities. When we say that this is a self-lie to remove responsibility, we mean this in terms of your being able to respond, not in terms of discipline. Interesting. So it's a way of tricking ourselves into losing our ability to respond. Okay, and another excerpt. When boredom is indulged, you are living in a space of time that was created from want of having more time. Yet when it arrives, you seek to fill it with activity. This delay happens because creation on the physical plane is denser and slower. Therefore, the space and time originally craved shows up, but sometimes out of sync with your faster-moving mind. Making a note that boredom is a sign of forgetting your original intentions can help make more use of that time. It is not required, of course, that you continue with your original intentions, but you do have the opportunity to release the judgments against your experiencing this slowing of time, and actually take a moment to stop and breathe, taking in those moments of being instead of doing. And another excerpt. Boredom is most often the result of the emotional part of the moving center being unfulfilled. And for those of you who are new to this this teaching, the emotional part of the moving center will be something you'll have to look up at the site right now. So because I don't want to distract from the mini Michael to describe it. But if you look through the basic introduction, you'll find references to it. So again, boredom is most often the result of the emotional part of the moving center being unfulfilled. It is certainly not an intellectual state. Boredom is the distraction of the personality towards struggles that have no solution, disconnecting the personality from essence. Essence removes itself from the struggles of personality, much like a loving caretaker may simply allow a dog to continue digging a hole in a hardwood floor until it gets bored. Essence seeks challenges, not struggles. When boredom is present, essence is not. When boredom is present, personality is on the verge of waking up to a new direction, but it must follow through. In most cases, this means that the personality must consciously realize that its fantasies are out of sync with the reality in which it lives. Personality must then allow the grief that may result from that realization. Upon honoring the gap between reality and fantasy, quite often a new solution or a path can be found. Personality must also realize that its efforts have become tiring, draining, and are in need of inspiration, redirection, and new information. It must then do the work required to generate the new world it seeks to create. Wow. So, what do you think about all of that? Well, like I've been saying throughout the show, let me know at podcast@truthloveenergy.com. And I really want to thank you for tuning in, and I really hope you enjoyed this first show. I know it was a lot of reading, and my voice can be irritating, and I hope you enjoyed the music, and I'll leave you now with the sounds of one of my most recent, inspiring, beautiful, lovely, amazing, talented, gorgeous, and slightly melancholic artist, Chris Garneau. And you can check him out at MySpace/ChrisGarneau, spelled ChrisGarneau. Tune in next time for the Truth Love Energy podcast. News, music, and channeling for a new sentience. That didn't sound good. I was trying to come up with a lovely phrase on the spot. If anybody can come up with a good tagline for the podcast, let me know. That would be great. I'll include it, and you'll get credit. All right. I love you all, and I will be talking to you soon. Bye-bye.
You say you wanna die, 'cause the things don't work out right. But you don't even try, though neither do I, and neither do my friends, though some of them pretend. And it's easy if you cry, 'cause you feel bad for yourself. I think about my friend who died, and how her kids didn't get to say goodbye. Then neither did I, no, neither did I, and neither did my friends, though some of them pretend. And it's easy if you cry, 'cause you feel bad for yourself. Myself or pretend that I'm not sad, and we'll work everything out, even all the stuff we don't talk about. Be easier if we cried, we'd feel bad for ourselves. It's not outside, it feels so